Episode 15, Travis Brown.
There's no way that you can have long-term visual issues and not have a related vestibular issue.
You're listening to the Tailor Fit Podcast with Francis, where we explore wellness topics from A to Z so we can take an active approach to improving our quality of life. Hey, I am so excited to have Travis Brown on our show today. How are you doing, Travis?
I'm doing super well. Thanks for having me, Francis. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. I'm so excited to talk about our topic today. Knowing that you are a functional wellness expert, I have seen you do your thing and known you for quite a long time. And I wonder if you might share some of your story, like of how you came to do what you do and a little bit about your expertise, if you would share that with our audience.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. And again, just thank you so much for having me here. I came here from a typical story about a former athlete. I was a two-sport athlete in high school and college. In both soccer and wrestling, and two great sports for various reasons that we might touch upon or get into. I'm very fortunate that those two sports have been in my life for a very long time, and I've coached them for over two decades since. But after I graduated high school, college, and then even graduate school, I decided that going into fitness and wellness is really what I wanted to do. I had kind of an affinity for it. I was good at it, but I was actually good at explaining it seemed to be. And I got some good results for some of my clients when I got into being a regular personal trainer. Since then, I got into more varied stuff, like the neurology of it, and just more in-depth about how everything kind of works together and how the brain is so important and how all this stuff goes. And so I've come up over the couple of years with a couple of ways of looking at things that I think have been very helpful for my clients, but also helpful for me just to understand what is going on with somebody and where they might have some gaps. And so I've put together some fun things. So I'm really kind of eager to kind of share that with you and talk about it. I don't even know where to start. So go ahead and give me.
Well, you know, we had a brief kind of chat before we started recording, and you mentioned a couple of amazing things. We talked about kind of three different kind of categories. Mm-hmm. And the first one you mentioned, I'm very intrigued by, and I have already some ideas about like a couple of exercises that you do that I've not really seen other people do with clients that I think are really great. So the first thing is bouncing, spinning, crawling, and rolling. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I've been very fortunate. I've had some really good coaches over the years, and I've read up on a lot of material. And more than anything else, even though I've played soccer all my life and I still play for fun, I play with my son. At like father-son times and stuff like that. And we have a really great time. I've really grown that much more attached to wrestling for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is that it's fun and it's a lot of individual personal responsibility. And so I really get to meet some athletes in a particular way. Those individuals who really want to kind of focus on those, on themselves. And maybe they're kind of socially awkward. Maybe they don't like team sports. They got to play with other people. Maybe they actually, a lot of wrestlers, people think they're really great athletes, but they're not, because if they were great athletes, they'd probably be ball sport athletes. I kind of say this to them. They get very upset when I say this. Like, you guys are here because you probably don't have great vision skills, for instance, and that's why they actually like the physical contact of the mat. And so that's why you usually don't see a lot of soccer players who are wrestlers. You usually see football players who are wrestlers. We don't see like extremely good ball sport athletes also being extremely good wrestlers. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying it's rare. And because a lot of people who gravitate towards wrestling are the ones that don't need to rely on their vision as much as other things. And I can go into that more later. That has something to do with the neurology of things. That being said, when I was like kind of unpacking, how do I go ahead and get wrestlers to be good movers as soon as possible? And this kind of happened because when I was coaching at a private school in Manhattan, and I was a head coach for about 8 years, and I was been a coach for over two decades in various schools actually around the country, I would get kids who didn't come out for wrestling until they were freshmen. Or maybe they played on basketball and finally got cut as sophomores or even juniors. So they'd come in to onto the wrestling mat, and I had a couple of tasks for them, things that I had to do. I want them to have a good time. I want them to be successful. I want them to not get hurt.
Okay.
So I had to have, so I had to have a whole slew of things, just movements that they had to really know. And this is when I came up with the crawling, rolling, bouncing, and spinning. And the reason why all these things are really necessary for wrestlers in particular, but then I realized it goes into much beyond wrestling for humans, is that you got to know where you are in space. And what's an interesting thing to note is that when we are in utero, the first system that gets developed is not really our joints and proprioception. We're not even like in gravity yet. You know, we're just hanging out in our mother's belly. And of course, we're not seeing anything. But what we do know is that our vestibular system is starting to work. It's the very first system of these main things, our joints, our proprioception, our vision, and our inner ear. Our inner ear is the very first thing that tells us where we are in space.
Wow.
And if you have any deficiencies in that, and so many people do, and anybody who's listening to this, you may be okay in regular life now, but when called upon to do something very quickly, or to get down and up off the floor, or if you've lost the ability to roll, or if you can't even think about what it would feel like to do a somersault and you haven't done it in years,
oh my God.
Probably have some issues in your vestibular system.
Oh my gosh.
And you wouldn't think it matters, but the cascade effect of having a lousy vestibular system it's huge.
So, I actually appreciate working with adults that are, I'll say, on in years, and I know that one of the things that comes up often is balance, and that's huge. But I think what I like to say is it sneaks away while you're not looking. You know, it's not one of those things like when you're a kid, you move, it's natural, it's you know, it's part of what you do. Like, but as we grow, we kind of get more, we get stuck in chairs.
Yeah.
You know?
You get stuck in chairs. You're looking at a screen. Your eyes are in the cage of the screen. Your head is not moving almost at all.
Yeah. So something I find very interesting is that, you know, I've followed your Instagram. You're at kinetic.sage. And I saw the post that you were leaving, and the movement that was involved I thought was so interesting. And so at the time, I was teaching a private session on the Upper West Side, and I had a little bit of time before the session. And I thought I would try one of your moves out, and it was rolling. And I'm a fitness professional, and I come from dance, you know, so I'm inherently a mover, but I had not moved in that way in I can't tell you how long. And it was really challenging.
Oh, yeah.
It was really sore. And I thought, what happened to the mobility in my shoulders and the ability to be able to move in that way? I can only imagine like we don't move in these ways, and we lose a lot because of it. Right.
No, absolutely. And the great, so of the four things that are there, the first ones that we usually do is crawling, right? We're usually crawling on the ground, stuff like that. And some people, and you know, there's a lot of infant development stuff with that. And of course you got to look into that, but people should still be able to bear crawl and crab walk and, you know, monkey crawl. You pick an animal and there's a crawl for it, you know? And a lot of people can't get down on the floor and do some of that stuff. And that's actually something that if you kind of unpack that and got people onto the floor a little bit more and to do that stuff, especially seniors, especially people of a certain age, but young kids and athletes, especially in wrestling and various things. Look, even in any single sport that's out there, field sport, everybody, you're going to get knocked down.
Right.
You're going to be in some kind of position where you got to get back up off the ground quickly and then accelerate quickly. And so if you don't have an intimate relationship with the ground and knowing how to catch your fall, how to absorb impact, that's what rolling's all about. Rolling is not just doing backflips and stuff like that. I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about just being able to roll over to my left side or my right side, or going into my back and being forward and not being so disoriented, and being able to know which side is up immediately and quickly come up. So it's great for performance, but some people can't even get on the floor without having a lot of pain and some issues and stuff like that. So this is a great way to kind of bring that back. So there's crawling, there's rolling, as we were saying, and there's bouncing and there's spinning. So with the bouncing and the spinning, these are all tools that if I just spin in the chair, or if I spin around once, don't do this unless you're in a really safe padded area and stuff like that. But just go ahead and spin around once in a quick pace, or twice in a row, and then stop. Notice, is the room still spinning after you just spun? There are so many people out there listening to this that may have difficult times not knowing it because they don't practice it, just spinning around in a circle. Once or twice in a row, whether it's in a chair, which would be a very safe way to do it, or just upright. And because of this, their brain, you may not notice it, but your brain kind of notices it and will actually slow you down. And you don't know it's slowing you down because it's the brain just cares about you staying upright. It cares about you being safe and surviving. Is not going to tell you like, hey, you've lost some vestibular function and this is what's in, and you don't even know it, right? So you have to start to, so what I do with my clients is I see them move a certain way and seeing if they can spin quickly. One way they can spin fine, another way they can't. Can they bounce on the balls of their feet with a rhythm? You know, can they maintain that rhythm? Right? Okay. Yeah. Can I do that in different stances?
I'm just imagining Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. You got all the movement.
Oh, yeah.
It probably is going to help with the dance steps too, right?
Oh, absolutely. It'll help with everything. I mean, anything you want to do. You know, if you have a client that comes in that says, I'm scared of falling. Well, that's a simple one. Well, then we got to have to test your whole system. And you have to bounce, you have to spin, you have to be able to handle the floor, and you need to go ahead and start doing some things to get you to roll a little bit.
It reminds me, I had a client once who, I remember we worked, so amazing. She was, I think she was 83, is that right? But I remember that she was more agile than some of my 30-year-olds. It was kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. But balance started to become an issue. In our conversations, I learned that she had this love for older music. And you got this idea that like dancing would be really like enjoyable for her. And she had a dance class that she went to. And so at a certain point, I happened to be working on the kids' school show. We learned a whole line dance for the kids' school show. So I taught it to her. And we did this balance exercise for her, spinning on the ball of your foot, like kicking one foot and then moving to one side. And then so it was enjoyable. It was a challenge for her. And I got to practice, you know, the kids' school show stuff.
Yeah, that's perfect. And what a great teacher you are. And just to figure out that's something that would be beneficial for your client. And so while you were doing that dancing, what were you doing? You were spinning. You were probably changing level a little bit, going down and up. Right?
Yes.
And you were moving laterally, so your head was obviously moving in space. You have to do that.
Yeah.
And so you can literally do that with your eyes closed. Now, you can't do that without a body and joints, but what you do it with is with your vestibular system. That's your inner ear that you're practicing whenever you dance and in any kind of way.
Are you talking about visualizing the movement and getting a benefit from that or actually moving in space?
Well, first of all, that's not what I was talking about, but you know that that's absolutely true. Right? You can visualize movement and get better at it just by doing that. So that's something that we both agree with. I'm just saying that when you do dance, it's just that your vestibular system has to be so on point.
Yeah.
It just can't be, if you want to have great vision and great vestibular system, if I was just going to go ahead and dance for the most part, my vision doesn't have to be perfect. I can be partially blind and still, but if I have a really good vestibular system, I'll be able to move. I'll be able to recover. But if my vestibular system is not quite on point, if I can't move my head in space quickly, you're going to run into some problems.
You're actually reminding me, I had a wonderful teacher, John Brooks. I studied with the Jennifer Muller Company and for good, quite a long time, quite a long number of years. And the thing that's amazing about John Brooks is Jennifer Muller is the director of the company, Jennifer Muller the Works. And John Brooks was like her right-hand man. And he is legally blind.
Wow.
He's legally blind and he is dancing on stage and doing lifts. I remember a piece that he did where he was literally standing in the middle of the stage. He had a woman standing, like he had his arms straight up in the air. And at one point she is standing on his hand straight up. Probably had her leg up in the air too. The lifts in this piece were just completely breathtaking. And he's legally blind. Amazing. Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you a story that is not even a story we were thinking we're going to talk about. So when I wrestled at NYU, 91-96, there's a kid in the team for 2 years. His name was Matthew Saplin. Matthew Saplin, due to a rare cancer, by the time he was 3, 4, 5 years old, he literally lost his eyes. He didn't just lose his sight. Like, he didn't have eyes anymore. He had glass eyes. He had a seeing eye dog. And we we would wrestle. He was my weight class. He was a little bit lighter, actually. And he was a great, great wrestler. Now, the rules for wrestling would be, for wrestling a blind wrestler, would be to have your hands, one hand on top and the other hand below your opponent. And you wouldn't be allowed to break contact. You always had to be touching. And this was never an issue when you're on the mat, because you're kind of on top of each other and you kind of know where everybody is. And so it was only standing where you had to stay in contact. But he was an excellent wrestler, like a super excellent wrestler. And he ended up doing very well and winning awards. And he actually worked for the city for a long period of time under Mayor Bloomberg. But unfortunately, he had a recurrence of the cancer and passed away about a decade ago at this point. But it's been, but he really left his mark. He worked under the mayor's office, under like the disabilities department.
Wow.
And he was a really, really smart guy, a fantastic human being. And he was a hell of a wrestler. He wasn't just legally blind. He really could not see. And a tremendous athlete despite that. Mm-hmm. So that, I didn't even considering talking about that as far as the importance of the vestibular system, which is kind of what this bouncing and crawling is all about.
So the different movements. So we're crawling, we're rolling, we're bouncing, we're spinning. So when you think of the different movements, like, do the different movements kind of relate to, we talked about getting up and down off the floor, right? So would that be like crawling and rolling?
Yeah. Now, the thing is, the biggest thing that's a challenge with most people there.
Yeah.
Well, the crawling is because a lot of people at some point lose their ability to extend their wrists. So
their wrists.
And flat on the floor. Oh, wow. So you start to unpack some of these things. You know, when you start to use a system like this, when I go ahead and see what people can do, if they have problems with their wrists, again, it's not showing up when they're grabbing pots and pans yet, but it will if they can't extend their wrists on the floor.
Wow.
So I can give them better wrist, elbow, shoulder, and neck function if I can get them crawling on the floor.
That's amazing. And we all know, like, wrists, elbows, shoulders, all related, right? So
if
you're having problems in one joint, it's going to affect the others. So it sneaks away while we're not looking all over again, right?
Oh, yeah. So if you don't get on the floor and don't, like, test this stuff out, it's a problem. Second thing that the floor gives us when we're crawling is an ability to do specific mobility drills, loaded mobility drills while we're on the ground. So we can do elbow circles and wrist circles and all this other stuff to help us mobilize our joints just by using the gravity in our own body. It's a great, great tool. So crawling is a great tool. Yeah.
The toughest
one on that list, though, is rolling. And the reason why rolling is because so people are so far away from going upside down, basically, which is what rolling is a lot of times, or rolling sideways, that they literally can't do it. So they need to do other things standing or seated with their heads first. The reason why the spinning is ultimately what you want to be able to do is because that's what true function is. That's what we should be able to do.
Spinning or rolling?
Rolling.
Rolling.
Rolling is the one, because rolling is just too scary to go over your head.
Describe what a rolling exercise looks like. Like the Aikido rolls or log rolls? There are different kind of rolls, right? What kind of rolls are you specifically talking about? Like, and can you describe it? Like, so someone could do one if they wanted to, or try it out.
Well, the log roll is not really going over your head, and it's going to feel a lot safer than anything else. And just rolling over sideways and doing it soft without you smashing your head on the ground, it would be a nice little start.
That would be good. You know what that reminds me of? The first time I ever saw a log roll was potentially, I was watching my nieces in a gymnastics class that they were in. Yeah. So they were literally lying on their back, and then they were lying on their stomach and lifting their arms and legs like Superman or like a swimmer in the water.
Yes.
And then they were lying on their back and then lying on their stomach. So, and what motivates the body to do the action? Is it your abdominal obliques? How do you get the roll going, and what drives that?
That's a really good question. It is your obliques. It's like you're shifting your weight by using your core and, you know, throwing your knees and your arms maybe in that direction a little bit. But it's actually a lot to do with your eyes and your head.
Wow. Oh my God. I've heard your body will follow your eyes.
Oh yeah. So if you want to turn to your left, just look left.
Oh wow.
If you want to generate force to your left, you got to turn your head and look that direction, and then your body will follow. There's a whole feed forward mechanism reflexively from your eyes looking in any direction, or at least there should be.
There should be. Can I tell you something? I worked with a private client once. We worked, you know, a couple of times together, and we figured out that she had an issue when she was walking, that she would start to veer to one side. It might have been to the right. She couldn't walk in a straight line. So if she was walking in her apartment down a hallway, she wouldn't be able to walk down the middle of the hallway. She would be veering off to the side. And what we figured out was that her eyesight was not equal on both sides. And that our fix for that was, well, she had to wear her glasses when we worked.
Right.
So your body will follow your eyes, right? So you know, I think just knowing what the issue was, then she could correct. She shouldn't have to wonder like, oh my God, why is this happening to me? You know, it's like, it's such an out of control feeling. Why is this happening to me? Well, there's an issue with your eyes. They're not equal on both sides and it's affecting your walk. So then it's, you can break it down and it's not so much like it's happening to me. It's like, oh, there's an issue with my eyes and I need to self-correct because.
Yeah. Well, so much of gait and walking is autonomic and you're doing it automatically based on the information you're getting from your body and your eyes and your inner ear. So you need to have, your proprioception's got to be good. Your vision's got to be good enough and your vestibular system has to be working. In general, when people start to fall over to one side, I mean, that's a very unusual thing. She had a pretty severe issue, right?
Yeah.
But there's no way that you can have long-term visual issues and not have a related vestibular issue.
Wow.
Because you have to, your inner ear is always trying to respond and work with your eyes to put yourself on the horizon and keep yourself upright and keep yourself safe. So the fact that she was always veering to the one side means that visually she was having a problem, but also vestibular-wise, it's a major issue.
That's amazing. So, I had no idea like talking about the eyes would bring up so much great information. You know, I'm reminded of another client who had a problem with one eye again and her peripheral vision on one side, like she really didn't have. And so what that affected in her was she ended up twisting in one direction a lot more than the other in her movements so that she could make up for not being able to see in the peripheral vision on that one side that was lacking.
It's scary.
Her oblique abdominals were completely out of balance. So we really had to work muscularly as best as we could. I had no idea at the time how much that could affect the vestibular connection with balance and so on.
Well, one last thing, just because we're talking about this now, and then I want to, and I'll go back to the other topics, the bouncing, crawling, spinning, rolling, is if my eyes don't like to go in a certain direction, let's say my eyes don't like to go up and to the left, my head will refrain from going the opposite direction because it means, because
down
my brain,
and to the right?
If my eyes don't like to go up to the left, for some reason, my eye muscles are tight. Or God forbid you had some kind of trauma to your head and you're recovering from some kind of concussion and whatever the case may be. There's various reasons why you might have some issues with a certain quadrant or a certain eye movement. I wouldn't want to put myself in a position, I wouldn't want my head to be in a position where I'd be creating more of a dead space where I don't like my eyes to go. So if my eyes don't like to look up and to the left, my head doesn't want to go down to the right because that means there's that much more of that area. I've created that much more around me that I'm not really comfortable with looking.
Wow.
So it would naturally mean that my head would actually have to be more likely to go up to my left and kind of hang out there a little bit
to make up.
Because I feel safer.
That's wild. Oh my God.
But that makes perfect
sense. It makes total
sense.
What
you were saying about your peripheral vision. Like, I want to make sure I can see what's around me because I need to be able to see, understand what's around me, even the things that I'm not looking at directly, because those are the things that are going to get me.
right? Out in the wild, right? Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's so amazing. You know what? When I did my first yoga teacher training, it was at Integral Yoga. And one of the first exercises they taught you was called the eye movements. And literally you would move your eyes in a circle, try to follow the second hand of an imaginary clock. So you would go in a circle, you know, and you could do it with your eyes closed. And then you would look up and down and then side and side. And I had taken an anatomy class not too long ago. And in looking literally at the eye muscles to realize that there are specific muscles that have your eyes look up and look down side and side and then on the diagonals, right?
Oh,
so I did a YouTube video that was really specifically for the eye movements, but adding in
That's
those
awesome.
Diagonals, right? Those diagonals. So what you're saying about this, if you're restricted in a certain line of vision, that it will restrict your movement in the opposite direction. That's so interesting.
Oh, yeah. Like you just can't really look at the movement of eyes and not deal with your vestibular system and vice versa, because they're just so wow. integrated, which is part of why this whole rolling thing.
That's so amazing. Important.
So going back, yes. let's talk about the rolling thing a little bit.
Yeah.
So most people can't roll, right? I okay. say rolling and they kind of go, I'm not going to roll. I'm not going to roll backwards or forwards.
Okay, Travis.
And great
secrets. What do you do to get your clients to roll? How do you finesse them into being willing to do it? What's your technique here? You got to share a little.
Sure. I get them to rock. I get them to rock first.
Get them to rock. Rock and then roll. Okay.
Rock great. And then roll, baby. So I basically get them on their backs and they curl their backs and they sit themselves up and they roll backward onto the back. They gently touch the back of their heads and they come back forward again. So they do that rocking.
Okay.
Then
great.
They eventually rock backwards and they throw their feet over one shoulder. But they still don't go all the way backwards. Then they come wow. back up and they sit up, and then they keep their legs over their other shoulder and see if they get onto the ground.
Wow.
And as far as the forward roll, the technique is an interesting one, because you got to turn your. So if I was going to go over my left shoulder and go yeah. forward, I don't usually teach a pure somersault. That's a little hard for people.
It is.
Once you do the rocking, you get into that a little bit. So,
this one that you're about to describe, this one is the one that had me sore for like 3 days. I was like, okay, yeah. I'm going to try it. Travis said this was good to do. It looked pretty cool. I thought yeah. I was pretty agile. And then I was like, wow, okay.
Right. So you get on all fours. Mm-hmm. Right? You get your butt down to your heels. You get that down there first, but you've actually got to bring your butt up off your feet. But mm-hmm. You actually put your forehead on the mat. Obviously, you do this very soft and probably with the spotter.
Yeah.
You take your left hand. Let me go in this. You take your left hand, you bring it out, and then you internally rotate the entire arm. So you're rolling your shoulder forward.
Yes.
Right. And then you got to create a window between your left shoulder and your ear. So you have to side tilt your head to your right.
Okay. So one arm rolls in, and the head moves away from that arm.
Right. And now you're going to roll through that space. And you're going to try to bring your hips up and over that shoulder through that space. And don't worry about how you land at first. No, you're just going to roll.
Just make sure you have plenty of space, right?
Make sure you have plenty of space. And that's actually how you roll backwards as well. You have to create a window.
Yeah.
Some people think about like trying to get that arm out of the way. I find it to be best that you tell people to internally rotate the entire arm.
Uh-huh.
And that helps round the shoulder forward. And so your body is thinking, oh, I'm rolling. I can roll over my shoulder here.
Okay.
And then I get my hips over that window. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm spotting them and helping them do that. But it takes a little while. And some people may never get there, you know. But if I get them to rock left to right and up and down, they are, especially with some of my seniors, you know, that I'm doing great work for them. I'm doing
That's
great
amazing.
Work for them.
Yeah.
And they feel a lot better. And the ground becomes less scary.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
With this idea of falling, I remember first getting a pair of rollerblades. A friend of mine was really big into rollerblading and gave me this videotape, right? VHS, mm-hmm. right? Way back in the day.
Yes.
And I remember watching the video and the instructor was talking about one of the first things you want to learn is how to fall. So that number one, you're going to be able to fall in a way where you're not going to hurt yourself, but also mm-hmm. to kind of let go of the fear. So he would have you practice falling.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
if you think of like just getting up and down off the floor slowly coming into the crawl, you mm-hmm. kind of, again, just like getting used to moving through those different levels. And
right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of the groundwork stuff I do with my seniors is just so crucial for them. And the groundwork is actually some of it comes from instead of looking at senior. Okay. No offense to a lot of senior instructors.
Yeah.
And I think they do amazing stuff and they do a lot of stuff that's standing. And I think it's awesome. I don't see that many senior classes where they intentionally get people on the ground and moving on the ground. They might go from being on the ground to getting back up again. Well, that's great. But how about really navigating the ground? It's such a lost opportunity. So I'm really interested in doing, with all my seniors, I do groundwork. And I'm kind of interested in putting together maybe some curriculum for
groundwork for seniors. I think we have a title for you, Travis, Groundwork.
Groundwork, maybe.
Laying the foundation.
Oh, look at that.
Ooh, that's it.
I need
that's
a marketing it. Person. I have
yeah,
a,
that's it.
Yeah, part of my staff.
Well, that's it. Oh, great. Excellent. Good. The thing is, I think you're right. I don't see people doing this. And, you know, the it's limited to, can students get up and down off the ground? And let's just do that. But You're right. It's a lost opportunity. What are you doing once you're on the ground? Like, are you just taking, just coming down to the floor and coming up off the floor, you know, once or twice or a couple times in a session? Or maybe you might, here's one thing, you might try to limit your getting up and down off the floor because you want to get other exercises in and you want to feel like, okay, well, we're just going to do a lot of exercises just down on the floor. So we only have to transition down to the floor once. I actually did that with a client.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you want the client to feel like they're getting a lot of, you know, movement in, and say they've had some issues, might start to restrict getting up and down off the floor when really it's a lost opportunity, like you said.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously we know when it comes to the older population, they do have to stand up and they do have to practice all the things they have to do to stay on their feet in the first place. So it's not like, that's not, you know. It's a balance. Always a balance.
It's always a balance. Now, what about bouncing? We've talked about rolling, crawling, spinning. What about bouncing? Tell us a little more about bouncing. And I think you mentioned kind of in time.
Oh, yeah. So bouncing in time. So obviously, you know, great athletes are very light on their feet and they can go ahead and jump a rope and do whatever the case may be. Bouncing is all about loading and unloading the body, you know, going up and down off of gravity and doing it in a rhythmic fashion.
Like, what would bouncing look like? Like, literally just lifting the heels and lowering the heels, or sitting on a Theraball and kind of getting that cerebrospinal fluid going? Like, what other kind of visually, like, what would a bounce, like, what's the variety there?
Bouncing on the balls of your feet would be a main one. Would be like the kind of the baseline one that can be regressed or progressed. But if people have a really tough time when their ankles, I can just have them just bend and straighten their knees in a rhythmic fashion.
Okay.
So you can just kind of knee bend, knee bend, knee bend, knee bend, knee bend. I'm not talking about like squat. I'm just kind of going,
okay.
And they should be able to do it at different speeds.
Okay.
At different rhythms. That's just, it's not, and so, and then sitting on a Swiss ball is another great way to do that. Another great way. Now, I hear you saying about the cerebrospinal fluid, what you're saying, and I agree with you about if you're thinking about compressing and decompressing the discs in your spine. It's like, you know, the spine actually likes to get a little bit of compression, and all of a sudden it has that zero gravity feeling.
Okay.
Right? So that's something that you really want. You're stimulating your spine and all your joints when you bounce. All your joints are getting that little bit of a feedback to your brain. But there's also a funny little thing in your brain called the funny name is an otolith organ called the saccule.
You know, I'm taking a intro to neuroscience class as we speak, like have class tomorrow. So I'm going to listen up for all these like things. Like you're helping me out here, Travis. I appreciate it. So what is it called again? The
otolith organ, which means like a stone organ, otolith.
Okay. And the saccule.
And the saccule, S-A-C-C-U-L-E. Mm-hmm. Measures, it's kind of a bean shaped, up and down bean shaped organ. It has like fluid in it, kind of like your other vestibular canals.
Okay.
We didn't even talk about the canals much at all today.
Yeah.
It just measures vertical acceleration.
Wow. So when you're doing the bouncing, then that would be related to that.
Yeah, you're stimulating a little bit. Your body needs to be able to go up and down. You need to be able to control it, you need to be able to have rhythm to it. Part of going down and up off the floor. If I start to descend quickly, and I'm not used to descending quickly, I'm not even going to know what's happening. But if I practice bouncing, my brain knows a little bit about that. My brain knows a little bit about acceleration up and down.
Okay.
And then it becomes going down quickly.
Okay.
And then coming down slowly, coming up quickly. So bouncing up from a seated position, not just bouncing on the balls of my feet. Right. And then it becomes jumping. Jumping is just a big bounce.
Okay.
I can squat down and I can jump, right? So then it becomes a little bit of a plyometric motion.
I was thinking plyometrics.
But that's only after I've just done my little bit of bouncing.
That's pretty cool. It's so amazing to think that the brain really is such an amazing control system. You hear about mind-body connection all the time, but I don't think it's thought of in this much of a direct way. And it should be, right? Because that's literally what's controlling the movements. And I'm so excited to just kind of talk about what you're talking about, bouncing, spinning, crawling, rolling. A lot of people might be in their workout routine and doing a great job of a lot of things, but I feel like this whole different series of movements, we can gain so much.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned also a couple of other things we talked about. Tell us a little bit more about the four domes.
Okay. I like the four domes. I'm kind of mucking around with the name for that. There are three main ones, and then I throw in a fourth one because I think it's super important.
Okay.
And basically, the main one that we have in our bodies is our diaphragm.
Oh,
I call that
my
a dome. Because
it is.
Dome. So if you don't have good diaphragm function, I mean, it only bifurcates your entire body. Only all the major veins and arteries.
Oh my gosh!
All your entire system goes through your diaphragm, and even with all this COVID stuff, the fact that literally breathing hygiene, breathing into your belly, practicing full exhalations, not pumping that dome, not pumping your lungs, and basically having a swamp in there. Is not discussed at all. I find that to be interesting is the best way I'm going to put it. You know, frustrating would be another way to put it. And I can think of more negative ways to describe it. So,
oh God, you're hitting home right here, Travis.
But now looking at that diaphragm and how important the diaphragm is and pumping everything, the diaphragm is always going to be communicating through your organs into your pelvic floor.
I knew you were going to say pelvic floor. Okay.
So there's your second dome.
Second tone.
Right?
Yeah.
And if your diaphragm is not functioning right, then your pelvic floor can't function right. It's not getting it's not getting the right feedback.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Basically, my organs should be getting smushed into my pelvic floor. My pelvic floor should have some tone naturally to do that.
Okay.
I'm not talking about necessarily doing Kegels all the time, but that should be part of people's routine. And guys' routines too. You know, I find it very funny that some guys will turn around and say, or some woman will actually say, men have pelvic floors?
Yes, they
men
do.
Men can do Kegels? And it's like, they better. Otherwise, their entire body is going to fall out between their legs.
Oh, my God.
You know, they're not going to be able to hold their pee or their feces.
Nothing.
What are you talking about? Humans have pelvic floors.
Humans have pelvic floors. Oh, my God. You know, it's wild. When teaching Pilates, I teach really specifically about engaging the pelvic floor, engaging the transverse abdominals, engaging the multifidi, you know, and when I have men in class, you know, there's a moment where if I describe it like a Kegel, like that's kind of a disconnect. So, you know, so I literally put my hands, my index fingers and my thumbs together, and I make this diamond shape with my hands. And I say, you know, your pelvic floor, you know, diamond shape group of muscles between your pubic bone, your tailbone, and your sitting bones. And I sort of point to those areas. And I'll say, pulling in and up towards your head. So as a male, feeling that you can engage your pelvic floor and draw, you know, you can draw that area in and up toward your head, and you can engage your pelvic floor. And it's the beginning of your deep core stabilizers, pelvic floor, transverse abdominals. And then, you know, lengthening through your spine. So I'm so appreciative that you're bringing in to the four domes, you know, and I can't wait to hear what the other two are. I'm thinking the arch of the foot and the other arch of the foot. Are those the other two, like the transverse arch? And the
we're going to go there. Absolutely. Yeah. But I want to go back to a cue you can use with guys. Well, if you were just a guy saying this to guys, they'd say, try to pick your balls up, and they'd understand that. You know, they'd say, go.
Okay. I don't know if I could do that one in group class, Travis. No, you're right. That's probably a one-on-one, purely one-on-one. And I kind of feel like that's a guy telling another guy. I don't know if I can do that.
Right. Another way
that works.
That works. We're going to say just stop yourself from peeing and then increase that sensation and try to draw that up towards your belly button.
Okay.
Like an elevator. Stop yourself from peeing. Which is kind of like the equivalent of a Kegel. I mean, I know it's not exactly a Kegel. The Kegel goes up further.
Yeah.
It kind of initiates there, and then you just deepen it and try to have it move upward.
That elevator image I have heard before, really specifically with trying to connect into the abdominals. So engaging.
Yeah. I like that language.
And then drawing in and up. Now, towards your belly button, does that, you know, do you think toward like the central midline of the body, if you had like a plumb line going right down through the center, as you're drawing that elevator in and up?
Yes. It's central. It's not a, it's not from that side necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not where I'm viewing from it, because you're kind of drawing it inward towards the middle and then up.
And then up. That's amazing. Yeah.
And
wow.
Then you're right. The third one, which that you already mentioned, is the feet.
Okay.
But the feet is actually not the, believe it or not, is not the really, it is the crucial one, right? Because we're on our feet, and if you don't have good foot function, you're just going to be in trouble, right? Yeah, super, super
tough. A lot of issues.
And we don't need, I mean, we all know about feet. I mean, I'm sure other people have already been on your podcast talking about feet, how important they are. And so I have a suite of exercises for the feet, a suite of a few exercises for the pelvic floor. Uh-huh. There's a ton of stuff for the diaphragm that are related to rib cage mobility and function. And then breathing exercises that you just need to have command of your diaphragm and of your breathing function.
That's amazing.
And it could have just amazing, amazing benefits for everybody. So my clients are really, hopefully, a lot of them have benefit from it. And if they did their drills a little more often, they'd benefit even more. And then finally, but the last one that people don't talk about a lot of is the dome, or it's kind of like your neck and your tongue complex. Uh-huh. It's like the dome is really kind of like the roof of your mouth. Mm-hmm. The roof of your mouth, the way that kind of connects to your tongue, and then where your tongue needs to be on that spot to give integrity to your neck. And so these domes end up being kind of really crucial areas of translating force up and down the chain, and they need to be able to communicate with each other. So there are tongue exercises, tongue and neck exercises for this top dome here that I'm just mentioning now. Mm-hmm. You got your diaphragm, which is for that thing, the function, you need to stretch it out. You need to have full exhalations. You need to have a supple rib cage and spine. Oh, wow. The pelvic floor, needs to be able to communicate rhythmically and out of rhythm with your diaphragm to have more command of it, And then you got to get your feet involved too. And you guys got to get those going, you know? And so when I talk about people and their four dome function, and I feel like when people are really out of whack, you know, it's like, okay, let's get these things. What's going on here? Like, do you have a sense of your pelvic floor? Let me see how long you can exhale or inhale. Can you do box breathing? How does your rib cage move? Can you do any thoracic lateral motions or glides or anything like that? Can you move it? How's your tongue function? If I make you do an around the world in your mouth, how fatigued does your tongue get? How quickly does it? Are there soft spots in your tongue?
And this has nothing to do with if you can tie a cherry stem in a knot with your tongue, or would that be a good exercise?
No, I think that's probably a great exercise. I think people who do that probably have a pretty good tongue function.
But what are some exercises? I'm just kind of joking aside. What are some actual exercises you would do? Like tongue rolls, you literally would take your tongue like inside the front of your, in front of your teeth, and then trace around in a circle, or... Like what would some exercises, tongue rolls, what other exercises would there be?
The very main one is around the world, which is basically I keep it inside my lips, but outside of my teeth. And I go into the cheeks reach as far as I can I'm going to run into my gums below and above. But if I do that 10 times in a row each way, I guarantee you're going to get fatigued, not only in your tongue, but you're going to realize what your tongue attaches itself to. And it attaches itself to the front of your cervical spine.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Right. If your tongue doesn't have tone, your tongue is short, or if your tongue doesn't like to go to the left or to the right.
Wow. Just like the eyes, right?
Oh, yeah. You're going to have asymmetry of tension on your cervical spine.
Wow. That's completely amazing. I want to challenge the listeners right now, like wherever you are, like if you're walking down the street, like listening to the podcast, do some tongue rolls right now. Like, let's go. Don't go all the way around.
So there's one thing.
It's amazing how profound that can be. I mean, anybody with neck issues it's profound. You know, I had a pretty bad bout of TMJ. And I remember like just kind of looking into like what might be possible to help loosen that up. And I can't remember if tongue rolls were kind of a part of that. Would that be linked, do you think?
I think for doing stuff with your tongue and tongue function will definitely help out your jaws. Certainly.
Fabulous. Great.
Yeah. It'll help out doing it. This is just kind of tangentially, but tongue exercises will help you not only with your singing, if you lose your voice if you're a coach and you're yelling. I stopped losing my voice when I started doing tongue exercises. I'm just giving you one right now.
Yeah.
But snoring.
It will help with snoring?
Yeah, because the tongue falls to the back of your throat.
Yeah.
Sleep apnea. Sleep apnea goes away with tongue exercises.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, but also when you do a tongue exercise, when you're talking about the eyes.
Yeah.
And there are four cranial nerves. Four out of the 12 cranial nerves fuel your eye function, your eye movement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you first of all, you have cranial nerve. I forgot what the occipital. So you have like three, four, six definitely are some of the main ones that move your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and are pointing in different directions. When you're working with your tongue, mm-hmm. especially in your side of your mouth, not only are you doing the cranial nerves 10 and 11, but also 5 and 7, which are your trigeminal and facial nerves, because you're pushing out from your onto your cheeks.
Wow.
So when you just do tongue exercises, like your whole brain's getting turned on. It's like this a huge stimulator, and there's a whole bunch of reasons why doing tongue exercises can be good in various ways.
That's so amazing. I mean, it would seem like it would be something that I think a lot of people would just like never even think of doing. And so I think it's great to share this and kind of realize that just on a biological level, like the connection is amazing. So cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Cool. So.
Well, that's our four domes. That's amazing. This is so much, Travis. I'll tell you what, we're there's so much great information here. We talked about one other thing. Should we move on to that one, do you think?
Or? I can jump in there. It's actually going to inform with the bouncing and the crawling and all this other stuff.
Oh, great.
Then we did the four domes, and now this BV2 is what we mentioned.
So BV2, right? Yeah. So this is the third thing you had mentioned, BV2.
Yeah, BV2 is just me. I'm just trying to find the most shorthand way to get people to do certain things. And mm-hmm. B stands for breathing, V stands for the visual, and the other V stands for the vestibular system.
Now, so just repeat again what it stands for. So
breathing, visual, vestibular.
Okay, great.
Right, which is kind of what we've been talking about all day today, which is you can't really separate the visual and the vestibular system. It's kind of impossible. Like one's going to stimulate the other in some way, shape, or form. Whenever you move your eyes, your inner ear is paying attention.
Wow.
There's always going to be a feed forward there. And it just has to, because that's how we function in space. So the ramifications of this is really powerful. But when I talk about the V2 part of this, uh-huh. as opposed to some of the other ways of just testing out your vestibular system, I'm talking about three specific kind of ways to move, of eye movements. Uh-huh. So I'm not talking about really acuity or even peripheral vision per se, directly, okay. or other aspects of vision, because there's like 25 different visual skills out there. There's a whole ton, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about how we can couple the visual and the vestibular system and how we can separate it.
Okay.
So if I want to go ahead and just keep my head perfectly still and move my eyes anywhere I want them, quickly, slowly, looking the distance, look up close, without my head moving at all, I want to be able to gaze stabilize and smooth pursuit and follow something with my eyes and totally take my vestibular system out of it. I should be able to do that perfectly and seamlessly. And if I have any spaces or gaps where I can't move my eyes without my head getting kind of reflexively pulled, that is a power leak. That is a problem. That is a confluence of activity that I don't want to have. If I don't want to have it, I should be able to choose when I move my eyes and not drag my head with it. So okay. I need to have pure and clean visual movements for me to be a great mover. Right?
Okay.
Now I need to be able to also have my eyes look right at you, Francis, with my head moving anywhere I want it to. So I should be able to move my head up to my right, to my left, down. And I should be able to do it super quick. And my eyes should still be able to be fixed on a target.
Okay. That sounds like a fun game. I think let's play the eyes game.
Right.
It's like keeping eyes in focus.
Right.
Like focus. Right. I'm trying to look straight at you, and then I'm going to try to move my head.
Without your eyes moving off the target.
Okay.
Like right there, I'm looking at you and like, you didn't do it, right?
Yeah, so no,
like,
I can't do it. No, I couldn't.
Look at my finger.
Okay.
And to really test that, I want you to be able to do that and mm-hmm. like maybe stand on one foot or put yourself in a stance where you are challenged but still stable. Like
yeah.
You're safe but challenging position, and have your eyes move without your head moving.
Wow.
Have your head move without your eyes moving off the target.
Okay. And somewhere we got to pat our head and rub our stomach along the
yes,
way.
Yes, exactly. And then, so the first one is just called smooth pursuits and just basic eye movements, right?
Okay.
Those are your muscular, those oculomotor muscles that we were talking about before, cranial nerves, right?
Amazing.
You want to get those to be on point and perfect and not tight. The eyes should not water. They should be able to move smoothly.
Okay.
And the target should be able to stay in focus.
Wow.
With your vestibular system moving and your eyes being stuck in a space, I should be able to do that quickly and smoothly and not lose my balance. Right?
Wow.
I should be able to be, and that's how you really decouple your vestibular and your visual system. The third thing is I want to be able to move my head and my eyes completely together. So if I move my head, I want my eyes to stay right in the middle of my head, which means I can stick my thumb out in front of me. Uh-huh. And as my thumb goes to the right, my whole head gets pulled by it.
Okay. So you,
to the right and to the left.
You on purpose, like choose to stabilize one part and mobilize another, right? Mm-hmm. So you either keep your head still and you move your eyes all around, or you keep your eyes still and you move your head all the way around,
right?
Or you move everything all together all around.
Yes.
Wow. Right. Okay. Cool. So
the first one with the eyes moving is just, again, eye movement, smooth pursuit stuff.
Yeah.
The second one is called a VOR, which is the vestibulo-ocular reflex,
wow.
Which means this should happen naturally, that mm-hmm. that I can turn my head to the left, to the right, and still keep my eyes generally on a target.
Sure, yeah.
But I want that to be refined so people become super good at their function, not just okay. I want it to be great. Right.
Well, so you take it out of the kind of the what naturally happens, and you really pinpoint it very specifically. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and people are going to have gaps in various places with their eye movements. They're going to have gaps where their head does not like to go, mm-hmm. or where their eyes don't like to go. Mm-hmm. So here's what happened. Remember we were talking about like moving your head away, and so your eyes, if your eyes don't like to go up to the left,
yeah,
your head doesn't want to go down to the right.
Yes.
So if I'm looking at you and I tilt my head down.
Yes.
Where do my eyes go? If I tilt my head down to my right,
my eyes,
if they're looking at you, they've big. Actually, in my head,
yeah.
gone up to my left.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So is it possible that because my eyes don't like to go up to my left, my head feels stiff going down and to the right?
Yeah.
And then people are kind of like, oh, you know, I got this neck stiffness. Can you show me an upper trapezius stretch? Oh, can you, I don't know, can you whatever, can you do this? Why is my jaw tense?
Wow.
Well, because your head doesn't like to turn a certain way because your eyes are so tight.
Wow.
And moving in a certain position in your head. So the cascade effect for not having good decoupling and coupling of your eyes and your inner ear are profound for your movement.
It's kind of amazing. It reminds me of, you know, with a lot of the things that you're talking about, like thinking about, well, in particular, thinking about the domes and the BV2, what it brings to mind for me is this idea of like the structure of a house. Like there is the external facade, right? But then there's like the wiring inside. There's the beams that are really important, foundational things, and the inner workings that are essential to have the whole thing work together, right? You can, you know, if you can't turn your electricity on, you're going to be lacking, you know? But, you know, but I think that it's so easy for the external facade to become the most important thing that's focused on. So this is really great. And this is what keeps everything running smoothly, you know, helps deal with different pain areas, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. I mean, if you really study pain is just an action signal to have you, to keep you safe, to have you stop doing something that is either you're tickling an injured area or it's going to make you hurt more in the future. Oh. So it's trying to stop you.
Okay.
So pain, that's why pain is sometimes not an indicator of injury. You can be injured. Everyone's injured right now and you don't feel a thing. Mm-hmm. So in the same thing, I know it's very strange, but it's hard to get across that pain is an action signal that's telling you to stop what you're doing. And so it's an invitation to go ahead and try something different. But a lot of times the pain has nothing to do with, it doesn't like the movement. But why it doesn't like the movement is not, may have nothing to do with that particular joint. It could have to do with something else that's going on that we don't know about. And unpacking the visual and the vestibular stuff is one way to get to it.
That's amazing. So it's a way to investigate it. That's amazing. So much great information, Travis. I'm really grateful like to be able to share this. And I think it's very practical too. I think that everybody at home can, or listening wherever they are, can, you know, can try on a few of these things. Like if you had to think of maybe one or two quick tips, like just a quick takeaway for our listeners, what would be like just a couple of things that you would recommend they could just do right away and have like a quick win? What would you say those would be?
Okay. I can combine a couple of these things, but Have you ever heard of box breathing, right? Breathing in.
I'm not. Can you describe a little bit of, like, I'm thinking, sure, like a full deep breath and then a full exhale, like kind of.
So box breathing is part of a breathing practice where you're practicing holding of your breath as well as inhalation and exhalation. And the whole idea is that it really slows down your breath. So basically it's a great way to get yourself out of pain and get your brain fueled and then having the right kind of mix of gases of carbon dioxide and oxygen to go ahead and feed your brain well, which is why breathing is so important, because your brain needs the right mix. And your breathing and becoming more conscious and becoming more skilled, a more skilled breather, is going to help everything. You can't move forward having better breathing. So I'm going to give you a visual skill,
okay,
combined with a visual skill combined with a breathing skill.
Okay.
So I'm going to imagine a box in front of me.
Okay.
And I'm going to trace the box with my finger. Uh-huh. And this box is going to kind of go to the end range of my eye movements.
Okay.
So basically, I'm going to put my finger at a reasonable distance. I'll start in the lower right corner.
Okay.
My eyes are going to look at that, and while that finger is going to rise up to the upper right corner, I'm going to breathe in through my nose for four seconds. I'm going to breathe in 4, 3, 2, 1. My finger is now going to trace over the top of the box while I'm holding my breath. Holding my breath for 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm going to go down from the upper left down to the lower left, that left side of the box. Now I'm going to exhale while I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Exhale, and I'm going to hold at the bottom as I go across again. So I'm getting my eye movements in, and I'm working on slowing down my breath.
Great.
If I do that four times, mm-hmm, if I breathe in for 4, up, hold my breath for 4, exhale for 4, and hold my breath for 4, mm-hmm, I have now taken 16 seconds, give or take, you know, you're estimating this, right?
Yeah.
Which means in a minute's time, I'm going to breathe no more than 4 times. So for people who don't realize they're hyperventilating,
which
a lot of people are, it's a great time to practice breathing into your belly and not into your chest, all right, to make sure your diaphragm is functioning. It's a great way to work on your eye movements. And you got to ask yourself, am I finding it uncomfortable? Do my eyes feel uncomfortable when I'm following the finger up into the corners?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or for some people, they start to do this and they start to panic or just feel too difficult. I don't even give them the eye motions.
Okay.
I just have them do the box breathing, right?
Okay.
But if I want to go ahead, so that's one idea to get a sense of, am I over breathing? Do I feel better after I do this box breathing? It's a great way to get into meditation, to start your meditation. It's a great way to start before you eat a meal, right?
Okay.
To get into that sympathetic, to get out of that sympathetic nervous system into that parasympathetic nervous system.
You're going to digest your food better.
Yeah, and get to a safer mode. But then combining it with the eye motions is just a great tool just to get into that visual field. Now, I could do the same thing with head motions. I can have, remember I just said you did this box breathing? I can have my head do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I can have my head go up. I can have my finger right in front of me. I can have my eyes look at it. I can start with my head down into the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I can breathe in as I go up into the left. I can hold my breath as I go across. My eyes are still looking at my finger, but my head's tilted up, going to the upper right, upper left now. I go down into the left as I exhale. Then I hold my breath as I come across.
Okay.
Right? So now I'm working my vestibular system. Nice and slow and controlled.
Yeah.
Very safe. Getting into really slowing down my breath and calming down.
Wow.
Those are just two great ways to get into the visual and vestibular system and get into my slowing down my breathing, because we're all stressed out. And doing
I know. Yeah. Especially so
that's,
now.
That's one big thing. And I guess the second big thing is when you're on the floor, is even in bed, just turn over to your left, like turn over onto the left side, and then quickly turn over onto your right side.
Okay.
And try to do that a couple of times, left to right, on your bed. Okay. Nice and easy. Just rocking to my left and rocking to my right. And I bet some of you out there will find that, wow, going to my left feels weird.
Okay.
Or going to my left feels, or I can't go fast, or I don't even want to go there. And that's something that has to do with the fact that you don't like to turn your head to your left. Ask yourself if you don't like to sleep on one side of your body compared to the other.
Oh, yeah.
It has a lot to do with a lot of things.
Yeah.
But because you do that, your vestibular system is is going to be stimulated on one side more than the other. Even in your sleep, you're just used to a certain way.
Yeah.
That might indicate something.
Wow. So
these are just invitations of movement, left to right, right? While you're on the floor, get used to your body feeling the pressure of the bed.
That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah. That's great. Then,
yeah. So yeah. Hopefully that'll be helpful to some people. I got 20 other things I can share.
Oh my God, that's so great. I love it. You're reminding me of the, this would actually be counter to that a little bit. So two things. One, it's like, wow, tossing and turning is not necessarily a bad thing, right? We're keeping our vestibular system going, right? So
yes. It's
a good case for like moving, right? But you're reminding me of one of the interesting things about Pilates was that in his exercise system, a lot of the machines sort of were like correlated with different pieces of furniture. So like there's the Pilates chair is one that is, but in his earlier years, I think he developed a bed, literally it was like shaped like a V, so that you would be wedged into that V-shaped bed, and it was meant to help you sleep better, I think, but to keep you from tossing and turning. So this would be like counter to the old idea of the V-shaped bed, like just didn't fly, didn't make it.
Right. Well,
now we
whatever.
Now we know, right? You know, it's all good, right?
Joseph Pilates had obviously a tremendous impact in the health field.
Oh my God!
There are people out there without Pilates, they wouldn't even be walking upright. You know, it saved so many people. You know, it's really been the thing that really spoke with so many people, which is why I always love all these different modalities that are out there, because you
so
never
great.
Know
you
what
never
people
know, right?
what's going to tickle somebody's brain, and kind of like, look, I don't do Feldenkrais, but there's some people who just are amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Top athletes do it, the elderly do it, and everybody in between. I can't teach it, and those Feldenkrais instructors are amazing, and the people they help wouldn't be helped by anything else.
Yeah,
because it just met them where they were.
Yeah.
So I'm really fascinated by all these different styles.
Yeah, such a good thing to continue to broaden the horizons. And, excellent. Wow. So Travis, I think the depth of the information that you're sharing, I'm just so grateful. And I think it's so helpful. I would love to know, how can our listeners find you if they would like to learn more about what you're doing? What is the best way we can learn a little bit more about what you're up to and maybe connect to learn more?
Yes. Well, the one place I'm really online is kinetic.sage at Instagram. And all you have to do is direct message me and stuff like that, and we can get the ball rolling. And I can unpack these two or three different systems I have for you and how or why they can kind of meet you where you're at. And so that'll be a good way to see some of those movements as well and what it might look like and what it might entail. There's so much out there that I really want to share with everybody. And I'd love to hear from anybody who got, you know, tickled a little bit by some of the things that I said and was interested in learning more. So kinetic.sage at Instagram.
That's awesome. I would love it if at another point we might be able to have another interview down the road. There's so much information.
Yeah.
So if you're up for it, you know, come on again. Would that be
okay,
cool with you?
I can't. Oh, I'd be totally cool with that. That'd be great, Francis.
That'd be awesome.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Travis. I'm so grateful. And I look forward to another conversation down the road.
Yes. All right. Looking forward to it.
Okay, great. Well, until then, take care and we'll see you soon.
Yes. Bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Based on what we talked about, I made a special download for you, Ways to Train Your Vestibular System. You can find the link in the show notes, and also you can find it on my website, www.taylorfitwellness.com. I hope this is a helpful tool for you. I look forward to seeing you next time. Take care. Bye.